I have a funny story along those lines, Calvin. So Shane, that used to work with us, he loved to get scam calls, and he would go along with it up until the point where they asked for his credit card number. And then he'd be like, yeah. So he had multiple ways he would do this. One, he would just put them on speakerphone and say, let me go get my credit card, and then just leave. Just leave it on. Sometimes he would give them 4 digits short so that they kept asking him for the 4. And he would act like there was really only 12 or whatever, you know, it's 4 short. Or he would give them like 4 too many. And he was so proud of himself when he'd come in. He had some pretty good stories.
So, hey guys, Dr. Dex here. I am here with the one and only Tim Mueller of Awesome Framers. If you are on Instagram, this guy is a dynamo powerhouse. And he does exactly what his handle says. He frames awesomely. And he is also a social media influencer, a social media ambassador. And he's also a friend of mine. So we actually both represent some of the same companies. So we've been on some trips together. We have a lot to talk about today. Tim Mueller, thank you so much for coming to our podcast. And I'm really grateful for you and for you being here.
Thank you for reading what I wrote, word for word.
No worries, man.
Yeah, sometimes with introductions, I'm like, oh, with an introduction like that, I can't wait to hear myself speak. I must be something.
So what I've been doing with most of these guys is I really want to give everybody kind of a little bit of a backstory. And I think of all the people I have that have been on the show and that are scheduled to be on the show, you are the one that is probably the best documented person as far as photos and video. And just, you've pulled out pictures that, like, dude, if I had pictures from my childhood, I'd be rocking those too on the internet. So I kind of want to know your beginnings, you know, go back as far as you want, and then let's just build from there.
How awesome did you have to be to earn the name Awesome Framers?
So here's the backstory on the name. The name is 100% a joke. I got an Instagram for photography. So here's the plug. My photography account, Sonic Screwdriver.
And that's amazing literally stuff.
It's so fun. Yeah. It's just, and there was a fantastic, early on in the Instagram days, like 2014, 15, 16, there was just a great community here in Seattle. You know, met a lot of people. They would share locations. You know, it was just, it's kind of like our community in construction on Instagram, but it was for photography. And it's just fantastic. Well, Kyle and I thought, he worked with me at the time, we were just like, we've always made the joke since like way back, just all the job site pranks that you pull and the fun you have. Way back in the late 90s, Ryan that used to work with me, he was like 18, I was 19. We used to say, oh, if only we should have our own reality show, but there's no cameras. And so that was kind of the genesis when we would just post this really stupid stuff, dancing, Running Man.
Oh yeah, we're going to get into some of that.
Things that weren't awesome. Then that was the irony. You know,
I disagree.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, maybe in hindsight, yeah. At the time, though, it was just like, this isn't that cool. It was like a panning shot of the roof, and Kyle would be hanging off the ridge. I mean, we would never comment. We would just pan right across like he wasn't there. Or if he was cutting a beam, when the beam dropped, I was doing push-ups in the background. It was just always something like that. And then in 2017, I didn't know my password for years. 2017, maybe late, my editor at JLC at the time, Chris Ermides, he's over at This Old House. He was like, I think you should take this more seriously, because he was starting to go to these tool shows. You know, there still wasn't, I don't think, really an influencer, but that was becoming a thing.
In 2017, there was Toolaholic, Tool Pig, a couple other guys. Oh, Kyle, RR Buildings. Yep. He was catching some vibes from some of the tool companies. It seemed like a lot of the guys that were being sponsored at the time, and it wasn't for cash, it was just for tools. Mm-hmm. And that's what I noticed, and I go, hey, these guys are giving away a $500 set of something or other. How are they doing that? And then some of these guys had 50,000 followers. Oh my gosh, 50,000. Are you kidding me? 36K, he's doing a 36K giveaway, man. It was crazy. But so, yeah, I hear you on that, because it really inspired me to level up my game, you know?
So how did you find these guys? Because for me, I didn't. How did I find anybody? It was mostly by accident. Joe Canning, yeah. Canadian Carpenter, and I, we go way back on the forums.
I need his phone number, by the way, because I'm trying to get him on next week.
Okay, I'll send it
You're
to you.
You're going to have to send it to me. Okay, yeah. So we're getting way ahead of ourselves here. So I want you to rewind a little bit more, okay? So you and I, people don't know this, some people do now, but we only live about 35 minutes apart.
Yeah.
We're both in the Pacific Northwest. I'm in Tacoma. You're in Port Orchard?
Yep.
Okay, so that's about a 30, 35-minute commute. We have to cross over the Narrows Bridge. If he comes to me, he comes over the bridge. If I go to him, I go over the bridge, and so on and so forth. So, and there's a big story about backstory on the Narrows Bridge as well. You can Google that. It's called Galloping Gertie.
Yeah.
So, but Tim, like, did you grow up here in the Pacific Northwest?
Yeah, yeah. I was born in Bremerton.
Okay.
Mom and Dad moved from North Dakota they got married in 70. Dad did a year and a half in Vietnam. During that time, Mom and her parents moved out. Like, Grandpa was taking a banking job or something. Mm-hmm. And then when Dad got back, he hired on with a local production builder.
Okay.
And that's how he got his start. So he came out of college with an accounting degree with, like, a minor. We found out later, like, a minor in political science. Mm-hmm. But we're still not sure that he knows what left and right means or Republican, Democrat. It's like, we kind of crack up. We're like, can you explain what's going on? He's like, not really.
No, it's okay, because who likes to talk about politics anyways,
man? No, definitely not me.
Yeah. Don't do it on social media, that's for sure. Unless you're gonna be unless you want to be hammered all the time.
Yeah.
So you're in Bremerton, you're growing up, you're going to elementary school, a local elementary school in Bremerton.
Yep, South Kobe. Okay. We lived down kind of toward Manchester in Port Orchard growing
and
up.
And then junior high and high school?
Yeah, same. Just like South was what, the biggest high school in the state. We had, so I would work summers from the, like, my sixth grade summer, which I think was 89. I worked all summer and it was so fun, you know, because at that little development that we had, it was called Strawberry Hill. And I think it was Division II. I actually drove through there a couple weeks ago. So we've since day one, basically, the dad started the company in 78. He's always had in-house framers. And the framers in the 70s and 80s and 90s, they did everything. Frame, foundation, siding, decks, flat work. If we had to roof, they could. And so I have one leg in that generation where we did it all.
Cool.
Starting in 89. I just remember out there troweling. And
89, you know, you're in sixth grade and you're working in the summer. Your child labor laws are out the door.
They don't even exist yet.
You're putting in 50 hours a week.
Yeah.
as a sixth grader. So through your junior high and high school years, were you into sports at all, or did you academically? You seem like it's the one thing I admire about you, Tim. Like, we've both represented Strong Tie, and I go and go, hey, this is a Strong Tie bracket. Here's how you screw it to the post. And you're over there all analytically, like, saying, oh, here's the pullout force is this many pounds and the da-da-da-da. I'm like, oh, man, this guy's kicking my butt on the explanation. So have you always been analytic like that? Have you always had an ability to, like, I mean, it's intelligence, really. You know,
well,
the
joke in my family has always been and still is, that if I really want to put my mind to something, I'll get good at it. And if I don't, like, I'm not interested in cooking.
Mm-hmm.
If
you
something
can buy
happens
food,
to,
man.
Yeah, and that's, yeah. And so the things that I really am interested in, so from the time I was little, I read JLC because Dad subscribed.
Okay.
And so I would say that a big part of why I tend to be a little bit more intellectual about the building side is because of reading the trade magazines growing up. So, like, my heroes were guys like Gary Katz on the Finnish carpentry side, Mike Girton,
love Mike,
Will Holiday. Yeah, you know, I remember buying Will Holiday's roof cutting video that he filmed at JLC in, like, the late 90s. It was VHS.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just, I just gravitate toward that stuff. And I really, like, I told our engineer, if I could go back in time with what I know now, I would have loved engineering. It's just that in high school, I just wanted to get outside and work. I didn't want to do any more homework.
You doing that, because I think to be a great carpenter in general, you got to understand loading. You got to understand how it works, you know, in your field. Like, you with rafters, let's say, as a hypothetical, and like your glue lamp beams, you got to understand the weight ratios and how things come together and why they have to be this way, or else you're just going to be assembling stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
And there was a great class at JLC Live we took. So in 2000 or 2001, we went to Vegas for JLC Live. And Dad brought our lead carpenter, Dave. And Dave was always kind of interested in this stuff too, you know, how to truss his work. And we took like a, it's exactly like you're describing. It's essentially like an overview of engineering principles. That's mm-hmm. just basic stuff like load path. Like, it didn't teach us to calculate things. That would be way
beyond. Yeah, I mean, that's math. That's where you get that degree, and you pay a guy that does the math. And I get the engineer reports for decks, for beams and span. And it's like Spanish, man. I can't even read it. I don't understand it. But yeah. It says here I can go 18.6. Oh, I get that, you know, but yeah. And I understand the size of the lamb. And after doing that multiple times over and over and over, then you kind of get an idea of, I think this is the kind of beam I need. So now when I'm designing my deck, I'm throwing in this size beam, and the engineer's like, how'd you know that's exactly what I would have prescribed to you? I said, dude, this is like the 50th one we've done. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of getting an idea. But anyway, so you're back. You're in high school. You're a 4.0 student, I assume?
Yeah, I was trying to think about it. Here's my claim to fame, Jason. I always, if I could get a C with doing zero homework, I was convinced I was smarter than the people doing lots of homework and getting Bs and As.
Okay.
So I would do just enough. And I was very smart in the sense that I didn't take like AP classes or like the ones that made you work super hard. So school itself isn't that mm-hmm. difficult.
We didn't have those type of classes when I went to high school. I graduated in 87, and advanced placement wasn't quite there yet, you know? But
yeah, I wasn't going to take that stuff.
And I was with you. I'm with you, man. I kind of got by on Bs. You know, I was a 314, 329, 38. I got a 386 once, but that's because I had two physical ed classes, and I was a weightlifter, man. And the football coach, I played football, and the football coach was the teacher, so I always got an A on that. You know,
yeah,
so
I boosted don't know what when I graduated high school, I think it was either a 3.5 or a 3.8, and then I did 2 years at Olympic College for an associate's degree, and I was a 3.2.
That's where I wanted to go next. So you get, you're through high school, you're still working in the summers for your dad? Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, and you know, starting in junior high, I'd work summers, winter breaks. In junior high, like ninth grade, I remember my teacher, he let me get off just a little early to go change clothes and get picked up. The development that we were building out was about 2 miles from my junior high.
Oh, cool.
So Dad would just send one of the guys to pick me up.
All right, so then you would get like 3 to 4 hours in every day or more?
Yeah,
or
two
what?
To three.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, and because he owned you as you were his son, he could just work you as much as he wanted to? Or was there any kind of like, ooh, son, sorry, we're at 16 hours this week, you got to stop working. Was that ever a thing?
No, we were busy enough that it was, you know, if the guys wanted to work longer, they could.
But you as a under 18-year-old?
I don't think I would have ever gotten close to the hours, except maybe in the summer.
Gotcha.
We didn't look into those rules. I mean, I was using
a
power saw.
Well,
before I could
drive. Now, but nowadays.
Yeah. No, right. It's tough now. Yeah. Cause we've started some guys at 16, 17, like my cousin. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, technically we're not supposed to let you use the saw or drive the forklift.
Technically.
So
be careful.
Didn't.
So be careful. All right, cool. So now you've graduated high school. You decide you're going to go to what kind of college?
So it's just Olympic College. So originally, I don't even remember. Basically, everybody that we knew was injured. And so it was like, okay, if you want to go into the trades, that's fine, but have something to fall back on. And my brother was doing running start, so he and I were in a lot of the same classes. So that meant that he did 11th and 12th grade at the college. And so we were in the same classes. And Mama, like, we always tell the story, I would do, like, no homework. And Brian, he's a good student. You know, he's a smart guy.
He seems very intelligent as well.
Yeah, yeah. He would feel bad if he got a better grade. And I'm like, hey, dude, I didn't study for it. You shouldn't feel bad. You earned your grade and I earned my grade.
It's like, it's kind of like I took a drone test when I was in Europe because I wanted to pass so I could fly by the Eiffel Tower, but fly in some certain zones. And I didn't study for it. I just took it and I passed it.
Nice.
I was like, sweet. Well, now I'm certified. So you decide, okay, I'm going to go to this college. I'm going to get this 2-year degree in what?
Accounting. And I think my intention, so it was like part-time, you know, it was still technically a full load, but I could go half days, work half days. And at the time, Old Dominion University out of Virginia, they were doing like this remote program where you could go to OC and essentially take the classes remote. It was very early. In fact, this was about the time of the Bush-Gore election, so 2000. Brian and I were the only ones in class because it was super early our time because it was an East Coast class. And they had multiple remote locations, and so they're asking each one, like, how did anybody vote? But nobody would answer. And so Brian and I would press the microphone. We would answer on behalf of whatever satellite. So we're just making stuff up. We just thought we were so funny. In hindsight,
so
we were just
goons. Brother, how he's younger than you, correct?
Yeah, 2.5 years.
By 2.5 years. So that's funny because I have a brother that's 2 years older than me as well. And you both work in the business on different parts of the business. But we'll get to that. So you do your accounting degree at college, right?
Yep.
You graduate?
Yeah, and I was just starting to take classes for the 4 year through the Old Dominion thing. And that's when I met Nikki, my wife. And I just was like, I just want to work full time. I don't want to take the classes. I remember getting the syllabus for one of the classes. What was it? And I was like, I'm not doing this midterm project. This is such a waste of my time. By the time, because I just knew I wasn't going to go into the business side. It's like, I'm glad I did it because I have an understanding of that kind of thing. But it was definitely more Brian's
cup of tea.
His strength. Yeah, his cup of tea. Yeah, definitely. And his strength. In mine, I always say he's the smart one and I'm the strong one. So
did he come out of college around the same time you did, or did he stick around? Okay, so you guys are both out of college. And what's next?
I just was on the job site, have been ever since. And he essentially, pretty early there, he starts set up the QuickBooks. Brian does all the payroll. He does all of our accounting.
So you're 19, 20 years old, and you're framing houses.
Yep.
Okay, and that's where it starts. So when you went in at that age, you already had a vast knowledge of what you were doing and how to do it.
Yeah, looking back, I remember talking to Dave, our lead carpenter, and I didn't consider myself journeyman, but I distinctly remember him saying, he's like, I'd consider you journeyman.
Yeah,
it's like, I guess if you got 5 years of hours, even though it's not full-time hours,
well,
it
adds
up. Well,
they say 10,000 hours to put in anything will get you where you need to be with it, you know? So regardless of what age you are, if you're learning and you're swinging that hammer over and over and over again, you know, and doing what you're doing, your layout, all the walls, all that stuff. So, okay. So what year, where are we right now in timeline? We're in 2000?
Yeah, I would say 2000, because I got married in 2000. So, okay. And I'm still going to school a little bit, like maybe the first few months.
Nikki's a nurse, right?
Yep, she's an LPN.
Okay, so was she well into her career?
No, when we started dating, she had just finished nursing school. August, September, we started dating in like October, November, and then we got married the following July.
Okay, so you dated about a year before you guys took the plunge?
We just clicked, man. Like we started dating in October, February we were engaged.
Oh.
So just a few months, and then July married.
Oh.
Yeah.
Quick one. Yeah. And look at you guys now. You're still together, man? Rocking
years.
It? It's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations, man.
Yeah, we just clicked. It's like people ask, how do you guys get along so well? I'm like, well, she's very patient, easygoing.
Yeah, she is. Tim's wife's awesome. Her name's Nikki, and that's as far as we're going. I'm not going to talk anymore unless you want to. That's fine, but just an amazing human being, and we've spent some time with her, and she's just a lot of fun to be around. So
yeah.
All right. So you get married, and then you're working with your father.
For him, yeah, he wasn't on site. You know, he's doing all the business stuff with Brian.
Okay.
You know, we're still pretty busy.
And so he's just saying, Tim, here's the blueprints. Go ahead.
We still had the lead carpenter. Yeah, Dave. And then it was me and then his son and then other people as they kind of transitioned in and out. So we were always like a 2 or 3 person crew. Dave was getting a little bit older and I just loved this stuff. You know, I'd take the plans home. When I make the joke when Nikki and I were dating. In fact, do I have it here? Yeah. I've been meaning to give this away. But I bought a Construction Master, and I remember sitting in her parents' living room learning how to use it with a little book. So, you know, it was very romantic.
Oh, yeah.
But very. I just had an interest in this stuff. And so 2000, 2001, you know, there was that recession in what, 2002 to 2003, something like that. in 03, I was on the JLC forums. You know, the internet was finally fast enough you could do something. And JLC, I just went to their, you know, the magazine had the website, went to the website, and there was the forum with a rough framing section. And people were posting questions and answering them. And that was like, I learned a lot from Dave and from just hours on the job site.
Yeah.
But as far as like real knowledge of like the geometry of roofs and a lot of this stuff, the circular stairs, I learned from a guy named John Kirkpatrick in Texas a few years later. It was just the perfect time where you could upload pictures. We were starting to get digital cameras. So 03, I was on the forum answering a question about fiber cement siding. And Dave Frain was the editor at JLC. And, you know, I get this email or this private message on the forum. I can't remember. And he's like, hey, I'm down in the Bay Area. I saw your post. We'd like to do an article on fiber cement. Can I fly up and, you know, just walk the job site with you for a couple of days? And so he did. And I think he spent 2 days total. And he just watching us, he's like, you have, like, none of us used the word content then, right? It wasn't
right.
a thing.
Right.
But that's basically what he was saying is if you're willing to write and learn photography, you have almost an unlimited amount of content. And so that started it. 03 was my first article. And then if you look up now, somebody messaged me the other day and they're like, dude, have you looked at how many pages of your articles are up there? And I was like, no, it's insane with tool reviews and articles. So that kind of led me up to, you know, we were trying everything. We got our first real forklift in 02. Well, real one in 03. 02 was this old Badger Dynamics. We traced it back. It was, I think the companies kept getting bought out by, and ultimately became Gehl. But that old machine wouldn't start without like ether. You'd have to really, and it would just go through. But at least we could move materials with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're like, okay. And so then in 03, fall of 03, we bought the Ingersoll Rand. And that was when Bush had his, part of that plan to help get out of the recession. And so there was extra incentives in there about capital investment. You could double the depreciation the first year, things like that. And so it would be stupid not to get the machine. And that machine was diesel. You know, we only had to fill it up a couple times a month. It was reliable.
Do you still have the machine?
We still got it, yeah.
Yeah, I see you guys use it all the time. It's like a telehandler, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a 9,000-pound machine. So
nice.
And then we bought the second one in 05 when things were ramping up. But anyway, that's the reason why I could still frame now, was the machine.
Yeah, because it's taking a lot of the abuse that you would normally give yourself and alleviating it. I think it's really smart how you guys are framing your walls, too. What got you involved in starting to do it that way instead of stick building the house and then sheathing it once it's up? Like, what triggered that?
So the way we probably in the very late 90s, the code changed where we had to start sheathing our walls for earthquakes. Previous to that, it was like lead-in bracing. Way back, early 90s, we even used thermoply. Stuff's garbage. And you can quote me on that. It's essentially is the cardboard people think we build with. That's thermoply. We squared and sheathed the walls and we lifted them with wall jacks from the beginning. Mm-hmm. Nobody thought it was smart to get on scaffolding or ladders to sheathe the second floor. So we always did that. But once we got to forklift, in fact, even a little bit before that, I started to build rake walls because I was reading Mike Girton's book, Precision Framing. And I would see that these guys all over the country are just doing things differently than us. And it's like, well, you know, if we did that, we wouldn't have to get on ladders. The hard part is, of course, lifting them. So we kept it to smaller walls. And then once we had the machine, it was like, as long as we can plan the access, we start building. And at the house plans that we started building, too, had bigger and bigger walls. And then it was just kind of one of those things where we were young guys in our early 20s, mid-20s. And so it's like, let's just, hey, we're smart enough. We think we can do this. And so we would do it. Mm-hmm. And I had my camera on site because JLC was like, just take pictures of everything. So I just always had it hanging in a bag on a stud. And so we just kept trying things. And it's like, you know, if we did this, then what about that? And the guys that worked with me also were that way. There was a guy my age, Jason, and he had worked with some other framers that had a lot of California techniques. And he's like, what if we try this? And it's like, well, that doesn't work. He's like, well, they do it. And it's like, okay, let's try it. And so it just kept morphing and we kept getting bigger and bigger. And then it would get to a point where it's like, even if we have to hire a crane, do you think we could build a wall? It's like 40, whatever that house is, 44 feet long, 25 feet to the peak, put the overhangs on it. And we did. And we're like, okay, well, what if we go ahead and hang the windows? and side it. Let's do it. 2 hours later, it sided, and then we lift the wall, and we're like, in one day, we could build this wall and side it. And that would have taken probably at least a week to do if we did it the other way.
A week. So do you think you kind of were onto something that maybe nobody else really was doing at the time?
No, this was all... So what's so funny about the internet is people are just like, you can't do that. And I'm like, yes, you can. It was in the old articles. Because they were building with like siding around here. Well, you're familiar. Like a lot of these old houses are T111.
Mm-hmm. My house
guys,
is.
Yeah. And we installed a lot of T111. And so we hung the windows before we lifted, sided them, caulked it, lifted it. So, and that wasn't new to us. That's in some of these old JLC articles. People were doing this in the 70s. They weren't necessarily building the big rake walls because we just didn't have wall jacks. And it just the design of a lot of houses in the 70s, they weren't really big walls.
Well, and you kind of need to know the limits of your machine and counterbalance and cantilevers and all the stuff to make sure that the machine doesn't tip. I've been seeing a lot of these crane videos on the internet recently where guys are boosting something over the house and then the whole crane tips over and crushes the house. And it's like, man, I thought you guys were qualified to do that kind of stuff. Like, you know, you got to really know.
That's tough, Jason, because the crane might be strong enough, but I've talked to a few guys that got crane certified. Ben Morton is a framer up in Maine that's fantastic, and he's got one of those rotator forklifts. So he went through the whole crane cert class. And there's such a different, even pump trucks and things like that, when they come out and inspect ahead of time, the vehicle might be more than capable of the load, like with a healthy safety factor. But they try to figure out what's underground before they set up. And that's what happens sometimes is you didn't know that there was an old whatever stump that rotted.
Yeah. And so then, how are you supposed to know that?
Yeah. And so then it gives way and the thing tips over. So it's a technical thing.
Yeah, insurance. That's what insurance is for, I suppose. Oh, that old oil tank that they buried just collapsed. Okay. All right. So now let's see. We're you and your brother are working for your dad. He's doing the business side of the business, and you're doing the construction side of the business.
Yeah.
And you we're probably not to social media yet, but you're the framer. You're the lead framer now. We've advanced. And who does like all the sheet? Do you guys just sub out the sheetrock and the all the cabinetry and all that kind of stuff? You guys have subs that come in and do all that?
What we keep in house is the framing and foundations and siding. And if we're super slow, like we trimmed out a house years ago, but it's never really made sense for us to trim it out. We could do it. You know, framers can do anything.
Yes, of course. They're very confidently. And
back in the day, we did do our own trim. We did all the flat work. You know, we would pour those garage slabs in the morning and then frame the floor and then trowel and then frame the floor. That way you had no downtime. But we hire out all the flat work. We did it during the pandemic because we couldn't find anybody. And it was fun, but it's very, I'm just not good enough at it. Like the guy that we use now, Sebastian, most people run around when they're doing concrete. You know, they call it concrete fever. You hear that truck, you know it's going to set up, and it flips
stressing.
A switch. Yeah, you're anxious all day. And Sebastian, he just moves, does his thing. They get a ton done. It looks great. And I'm like, he seems so unhurried. I know he's stressed because he's calling and texting me leading up to it. But he just, he makes it look really easy.
Okay,
so we sub out, you know, all the MEP, the roofing, you know.
Yeah.
Asphalt driveways, whatever.
So basically what you guys, I just want to make this clear to everybody that you are involved in this company that your father owns, that you and your brother work for your father, and you guys do full construction builds of homes from beginning to finish to end to sale. Now, are you guys real estate certified? Do you sell your own houses or do you have a real estate agent that does that?
We've got an agent, yeah.
You got an agent. Okay. So basically it starts with you guys finding property, right?
Yeah, so we're really the developer.
We've
done a few short plats, but for the last, I don't know, 25 years, you just find lots and sometimes sit on them. So like we're out in Lakeland Village. We've had some of those lots for 20 years.
Okay, all right. So I just want to kind of give a scope of, because a lot of people are going to join in on this and not realize, oh, is he just a framer? He's awesome framers. You know, he frames houses. But no, it's more than that. So your brother... He does, like, he orders all the HVAC and all the materials, that kind of stuff, like and parts and pieces and things like that?
So that one to me is much more nuanced than it used to be. As the general contractor, you used to just basically manage the subs. And then we had, you know, certain things in-house. But with energy codes and the way things have changed, and Brian's aptitude goes way beyond just the accounting. You know, like he is very meticulous. So like if the IRS came in today, he could be like, boom, here's the button. Yeah, we're ready for the audit. That he just, he lives... Brian wants to live to minimize future risk, which is fantastic.
Man, what an asset to have on your team.
Yeah, right? It's not worth the headache. Because when he first started with Dad, you know, the old school, you know how it is. It's like, well, let's just get it done and deal with the consequences later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, now we have to dig that up because the pipe got crushed or that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
well, let's
yeah.
just do it right the first time.
Okay.
So in the last maybe like 7 or 8 years, Brian has just like as a hobby, I think of it as a hobby for him. He just wanted to learn all these things. And so he would be sometimes more knowledgeable than the sub on something like HVAC. So he really gets into the theory of it. He listens to all the building science podcasts, the Manual J, all this stuff like load calculations for heating and cooling. He gets into that, how the insulation and air sealing relates to that. He wants to be able to speak enough of the language with the subs that you can troubleshoot.
And he's hanging with Matt Reisinger, you know. It's like I was at IBS and I was at the Maximo booth and I'm in the back hall or the side, you know, aisleway, and they come walking up and Brian's like, hey, Dr. Dex, what's up? I'm like, hey, man, I've never met Matt before. So I shook his hand and he's just like in it. He's in it to win it. He's all in. And it's very refreshing to see people like that in the trades. I think that, you know, it goes, I think every podcast we've had, we've talked about it, how the younger generations, a lot of them aren't going into the trades. And there's a lot of, I mean, people, don't take this the wrong way. You can go to get a 4-year degree and go to work for some firm, but we can, as tradesmen, can still out revenue you easily.
There's a guy, Sim Ayers. He's written a couple books now on geometry. He used to be on the forums with us. This was probably like 2012-ish. And he was a career framer in California. So came up in the tracks. And he said that in the 70s, the roof cutters were making more money than the doctors who were going to live in the house.
There you go.
And the doctors would be like, because it was such a specialized thing, you got good at it. That's why Will Holliday's book is called The Roof Cutter Secrets. You didn't share that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right.
But fast forward to today, we're trying to share everything.
Right. I have a kind of a pay it forward attitude. I think you do as well. You've shared much valuable information with me. As a matter of fact, Tim and I have met a few times for lunch because we're close together, and we've sat down, we've compared some notes, and we're still both scratching our heads on this whole social media. I think some of the social media we're going to touch on this video, but then some of it I think we should save for Patreon.
Yeah, because there's stuff that personally... Because I thought about the Patreon thing too. There's stuff that I would never say going live on Instagram because I don't know who's listening.
Right.
But if you know who's listening, you can. And Brian's the same way too. There's just certain business stuff, even like sharing horror stories, either horror clients or mistakes that we've made, that you kind of let. Dave Frayne at JLC told me that years ago. We made the cover with a Rakewall article where Kyle, who was 6'4", 6'5", we had him standing on top, the very top of a three-legged ladder, on his tiptoes to nail off a brace. Didn't even think about it, right?
Right.
Wearing hearing protection, eye protection, that was our PPE. Mm-hmm. But when it came to ladders, we always stood on the top step, the one that says
don't
stand.
That's what they're for.
That's what they're for. You need that extra foot. And Dave forwarded me this letter that was like, I swear it had to have been the Unabomber because it's all like lowercase. Of course, I think that guy had like a math or a literature degree. But anyway, it was, he's going to report us to OSHA and blah, blah, blah. And that was really the first time where it was like, oh, we do have a lot of exposure for the stuff that we put out there.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, I get frequented questions about certain, maybe the angle of the camera was off a little bit or maybe it wasn't. But, you know, you can't work in fear. You just can't work to the rule every time. You just can't.
Yeah.
I can't. I just can't. You know, it's difficult. So, unfortunately, 3 points of contact. You know, like, dude, I'm carrying a drill down a ladder. I'm hooking it. I'm okay, technically. Yep. But yeah, you're just going to get, no matter what you do on the internet, you're always going to get some form of negativity one way or another. Just
yeah, when it comes to safety, like that's something that we've really tried to set a better example.
Yeah.
So we'll if it's a two-story house, we'll pre-build the guardrails before we lift the wall. Mm-hmm. And I really resisted that. But it actually saves us a lot of time having guardrails, because even the liability of somebody, you know, people come out. Sometimes we have cameras on site, and it's amazing how many people are walking a job site when you're not around.
I love the system you have set up for your monitoring. in the past have often said to myself, I wanted to set up my job site trailer kind of that way with some security on it. And I used to have a mobile alarm on it, but it just, the technology wasn't quite there. But I love what you're doing where, hey, look at this guy. He's stealing some 2x. These dudes are coming out of the woods and they're just grabbing stuff and walking off with it, even though we have chain link fence all the way around our home. You know, that's your property, and at least you can see, and you've actually caught criminals on site. Yeah. You've called the police, said somebody's stealing stuff off my site, and you met them there, and they arrested a guy, right?
So they're Real Link cameras, and what's funny is we knew that site was going to have trouble, because that's what the neighbors told us.
Mm-hmm.
One of the neighbors stopped by, and he's like, hey, these guys, then they're not going to stop. He's like, I caught him one day, and I held him at gunpoint, and was like, here's the thing. You come back and I'm going to shoot you. So go tell your friends. And he's like, I was fine. And I was like, yeah, we don't carry guns. We don't go that whole route. There's too much liability on the other side of that. So we knew it was going to be an issue. We looked into cameras. And so we bought the Real Link trail cam. And then you have to get a T-Mobile SIM card. So we just bought the cheapest SIM card because we didn't think we'd use much data. And then sure enough, we could see people coming. And so then I reached out to Real Link and I was like, hey, we have like the most authentic footage that you could ever get. This is like happening pretty often. We can almost plan for it. And so then I did like a sponsored, I think it was just a short on YouTube and maybe an integration in a YouTube video. And then, so of the three cameras we have, we bought two of them and they donated one, right? And then we did the content.
Cool.
But they're not really willing to pay enough to make it worth the time. So I'm like, I just keep posting it and don't even...
Yeah,
we don't have an agreement because and that might be a discussion for later. At what point do you charge for content versus just do it because it's good for the community?
Yeah, I have opinions on that.
Yeah, that's probably a good topic for later. So anyway, with this one, we could see it. And Kyle that works with me now, he's like super invested. Like he single-handedly is going to catch these people. And so we both just happened on a Sunday. It was pouring rain, and we could see. We had stored the planks, aluminum planks, up on top of the garage walls because we thought nobody's going to get them there. It's easy for us to pull with the forklift. And it's pouring rain. I had just checked the camera. I think I was reading. This was last May, so spring of 24. And he texts me. He's like, hey, I think somebody's out there because it looks like the planks moved. And so we're texting like, it couldn't have been the wind. It's like, it's been windy. He's like, no. I said, okay, you watch the camera. I'm just pulling on clothes and driving out there. It's about 10 minutes. And, you know, breaking the speed limit. I can get there in about 8. And so I see the text pop up that, yes, they're there. So I just hit 911. Was like, I'm on my way out. I'm going to stay down the street. None of us are armed. But they're in the garage. We're watching them on the camera. Try to get this plank down. And so they're like, okay, deputies are on the way, but they probably won't do anything until there's 2 or 3 cars. You know, and so she's looking at on 911 dispatch. She's like, okay, where are you going to be? And so I can read off the street. I'm like, I'm tucked away over here. So then pretty soon I get the call back and they're like, deputies are on site. They're chasing them. You're going to need to move one street over. They're heading your direction. So I move over. So I don't know, my brother-in-law, Greg and Kyle, they're all watching the cameras and they're watching the deputy chase the guy. So they got one of the two, the one that couldn't run as fast. So then I head up there and unlock the gate. And it was just so, so sad because these guys are on, they just will fill their pockets. So they took the light off the top of the forklift. It's worth nothing.
Right.
And just a few miscellaneous things, like a chain.
Yeah, just simple stuff that they can do something with in their wooden
it's like
hut.
So that's how desperate they are.
Man.
And the guys just all, and so, you know, as a content creator, I'm also, there's like two sides of this, right? There's the side that, hey, this is annoying. We want to get these guys caught. There's the other side that's like, hey, check out what's happening. So I'm filming with my cameras. The guy's there in handcuffs. You know, I've got the camera footage from the Tesla. Nikki's like, take the Tesla because you have all the cameras around it that's recording everything.
Oh, that's so funny.
So it's
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So that system's worked out pretty good. You know, I could check it right now and we could see what's going on. And it's been nice too. That's one of those unintended consequences is there's times where we can't be on site, but I can check. Is the inspector there? I'll get a notification that he's going to be there, or there's a delivery. Mm-hmm. So they're not very expensive. And with the plan, I think it's worth having one on every project, even just for that.
You know, as a home builder and on a bigger scale, you know, your budgets are bigger. The homes are expensive. It's probably worth having that security, because what I do, usually somebody's living at the house. Mm-hmm. So it's a less chance of things coming up missing. But it does happen still, depending on circumstance. So, yeah. But yeah, I can definitely see having, in your situation, having that on site. That's awesome. All right, Tim. So now you're well into the business. You're rocking and rolling. You guys are building homes, so on and so forth. And then one day I'm on Instagram, and I see these dudes dancing to Britney Spears or something, man. I don't even know what it was. It was hilarious. I saw some guys, they had a wall on the ground, and they look like they're all running in place, you know, with a drone shot. I'm like, these guys are great. So I follow Awesome Framers. Tell me about your entry into social media, and how did it start? When did it start taking off for you?
So 2017 is when Chris told me I should take it seriously, but I kind of ignored it. So the account started in 2013. That was the very first post. And it was literally doing the Running Man with the new stiletto hammers that we had just gotten. It's so dumb. It's so dumb. You know, it's like, I still remember, because back then Instagram, you could only do like, what, 15 second clips?
I don't even know. When I started, it was only photos.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't think, and then it was 30 second videos. I don't think video was even a thing back in like 2012.
Yeah, it was like really short. So yeah, and we didn't have any editing software, so you would try to like plan your clips to be like, okay, you're going to hold it for 2 seconds doing this, and then we're going to do that, and it will end with like hitting an inch and a half nail, like we're so cool, like mic drop with a hammer. So it's just dumb. And so when Chris said that like 4 or 5 years later, I just still was like, I don't want to get into video. Still photography is easy. That's fun. I've learned how to do that. Mm-hmm. Video is a whole different animal, trying to edit and all that kind of stuff. So I think it was summer of 2017. Chris couldn't make it out to the Keen event down in Portland where they would do a media event. Mm-hmm. I think you've been there.
I was there once until I got booted.
Pun intended. You got the boot from
the
good
one. Yeah, I got the boot, yeah.
So down there was the first time I met Paul Toolpig, Kiefer Toolaholic, Murray Kruger Construction. Mm-hmm. You know, same thing, right? 50 to 100,000 followers. You're just like, mind is blown. Some other people, I didn't know who they were. And then April Wilkerson was there, and she's huge on YouTube.
Yeah. I met her once in Seattle at an event.
Yeah,
and then she ended up moving. She moved somewhere else.
No, that's Ann of All Trades. Ann of All Trades.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Yeah. So I haven't met April. I met Ann. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We got to go up to Annie's farm. That was so. When April came, we all went up there and met her at the farm, and her husband got to meet the donkeys. That was really cool. Yeah, I mean, it's so cool. Little Howdy the donkey, mini donkey. But I remember talking to April at the Keen Garage, which you can go in and buy, you know, Keen shoes or Keen Utility. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who April is. And I'm nobody. I have like 6,000 followers on Instagram or something, which at the time is like, why would anybody follow us? We're not posting anything. And she said who she was. And I was like, oh, okay, you're a YouTuber. I didn't know what a YouTuber was then. You know, I didn't really ever go on YouTube. Except if like the light went out in the Sprinter, that's where I would search figure out how to change it, right? And some guy holding his camera shows exactly the screw to take out to get to the light. So I think that summer, we all just started following each other. And I think this has never been confirmed that I can see, but I think that the larger accounts following my smaller account helped to kind of get it out there. Hmm. But at the time, like stories just started on Instagram. It might have even been the following summer. And at the time, I was like, this is the stupidest feature. We're just supposed to tell people like what we're doing. And so we would just do dumb stuff. It was a joke. It was the song came on, we were singing to it. I just thought I was super annoying. And I remember starting to get DMs from, you know, people like Murray or April or others. And they're like, you guys are hilarious. And I'm like, really? Okay. So we just kind of kept posting that stuff. And then we just, as it got easier to do with your phone, we would just, as we were doing things, we're like, you think that's worth posting like as a tip? Is this one of those things we wished we had known, you know, like 20 years ago and we just figured it out yesterday?
Like the crescent wrench built out of a piece of plywood to tip the the glue lamp up or something like that.
Yeah, and that was like Caledon Timber Framers posted that. A way to, because there's been times alone where I'm like, how am I supposed to roll?
Yeah, how are you going to roll this? Yeah,
exactly. And then I saw that and it's like, so, and then you try to give credit to the people who you got the idea from. I don't know. I want to say this as bluntly and with as much vitriol as I possibly can. I don't like when people learn something and they don't give credit to the person they learned it from.
I got a guy in Australia that does that to
that
me.
That wasn't religious. With any vitriol at all.
Exactly.
I could translate for you, but
I have a guy.
I'd have to edit more.
I know a guy that does that to me on the relig.
Yeah. And there's people that have done that to us since.
Of course.
And it's like, okay.
Hey, imagery is the best form of flattery, man.
If you give credit to those that you learned from, it creates an environment where people are willing to try, share.
You and know what? Give... 100%, bro. Sorry to interrupt you, but I'm 100% on board. Give credit when credit's due.
Yeah. Why not? If they and then you create the environment like Ben Morton I mentioned earlier. Ben says he was reading all my articles in JLC, but if you go to Ben's job, he is light years ahead of me as a framer. They took everything, tried it, and then made it better. Better and bigger. And it's like, cool. I got to go out there and do a walkthrough and do a video with him, and I'm just like, this is so satisfying. And so I know Gary Katz feels the same way. He pioneered this whole content creation influencer thing. Really started with Gary and the JLC Live guys. And now when you talk to him, he is tickled pink to see anybody that you know, fixes a door by bending the hinge. You know, and it's like, I learned this from Gary, you know?
Nice.
Carpentry by Mar will show that stuff. And he's
like,
I learned it from Gary.
That guy, he's on point, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I enjoy his stuff. I don't watch all of it. You know, sometimes when you're a content creator or an influencer or an ambassador, whatever you want to call us, right? You kind of get involved in your own creation of content and you don't spend as much time looking at everybody else's stuff. I'm still the business owner. I'm still in the field. I'm still putting in 40 hours a week with my team. I don't walk away too often early off the job site. So I'm still trying to create all this stuff either during the day or after work or while I'm driving or whatever it is, you know, that I shouldn't be doing. Just sometimes to get the information out.
Because
I think the worst thing for me is creating all this great content and then not doing anything with it. You know?
It's hard to do it all.
It's a struggle at times. Like if it wasn't for Studio Man, we wouldn't be talking right now. There would not be a podcast. And there wouldn't be a YouTube channel. Period. Because I just do not have the bandwidth to do it.
Yeah.
So
and Calvin does a fantastic job too. Like if you
I
did
know.
It,
Thank
it
you.
Wouldn't be the same.
No, it would suck. And the thing for me is Calvin, he is the trained professional audio engineer. So when I asked him to become a videographer, it wasn't his favorite thing to do, but he's become so proficient at it. He's so good at it. And thank God we have, you know, the funding to buy a nice camera and have a nice lens and all this other stuff that we need to have so that we can do this stuff, you know? And so I'm so grateful to have somebody like that on our team that can take us to the next level because I wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
But this is really the podcast spurs from Calvin, DJ Studio Man is where.
Good job, Calvin. Good job.
Where this comes from.
Thanks.
So.
And now I can cut all this.
No, you leave it in and put your face in there. Calvin's on a secondary camera over here. So we found like the first two episodes, it was just me and Calvin. And instead of a split screen with you and me, it was Calvin and I. And they were pretty good. They were pretty good episodes. So I'm hoping that you find a way to split the...
Have you not watched the third episode?
I don't think I've caught the third episode yet. I think you just put a couple blurbs in, though. You didn't, like, do... You need to be, like, right in the middle of us, right here, you know, doing your thing.
I'm letting the host and the guest talk. That's my thing.
Right.
That was the intention the entire time.
Jason. Yeah, I don't know. But everybody loves Studio Man. Everybody wants to see Calvin on the jam, so... Come on, man. Awesome. Okay, Tim, where... Okay, so... I was a late bloomer. Okay, so I took to social media like a butterfly, but I kind of, because I've always been big on verbiage. I was big on spelling. I try to always talk a certain way but be me, you know? But I didn't learn all the subtleties and the techniques about sponsorships and all this other stuff that can come along with an audience. And also just putting out certain product like at certain time, like your YouTube channel grew so much faster than mine. I was envious. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, we've been doing this for 4 years and you just started your YouTube channel and you've already surpassed us in subscribers. I'm like, how is that even
possible?
Remember
what I told you?
Yeah, shorts.
Shorts. I just got lucky. In fact, the Instagram video I posted today was one of those. I had like three or four in a row. I started YouTube right going into the pandemic, but then Shorts was like maybe 2 years later and I wasn't really getting any growth. And Kyle Stumpenhorst told me that. He's like, your audience from Instagram won't come over. It's a different, right. It's a whole different group.
Yeah, they won't.
He was right. Mm-hmm. So these Shorts went into the millions. And so I would say a good chunk of my subscribers really are there for the short form. And they complain about the long form, and the long form people are like, yeah, we don't like your short form.
Well,
so it's just different audiences.
I've watched your long form videos, and please don't take this the wrong way, but I was kind of bored.
Yeah.
On one or two that I watched, I was like, all he's doing is cutting a beam. How can this have 100,000 views, and we get 10,000 views if we're lucky? And don't take this the wrong way again. I was like, this seems like it's more interesting, but there's obviously more to it than just the actual video. And I think that you're right. I think certain people love a long format video, and then everybody else is in it for the quick, witty 1-2 punch. So I think you have a good dynamic, a good mix of that. And we started putting out a short every single day.
Yeah.
But maybe it was a little late in the game for that. I don't know.
Yeah, and those, they popped for me. And then like 2 months later, YouTube announced that they would start monetizing shorts. Mm-hmm. And then since then, nothing pops for me. And so it's hard to go,
That's another comparable note day that we'll have to have together where we'll sit down. I'll bring Calvin this time because he can really delve into the analytics of the YouTube
I don't
stuff,
get into the analytics. I know a very large YouTube account. I won't say who it is because I don't know if they would want me to say.
Mm-hmm.
He does fantastic, his own editing. All of their videos within like 6 hours are over 100,000 views.
Yeah.
They're a fun crew to watch. They're just good guys personally too.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, dude, there's no money in shorts. Why would I spend any time with shorts? So he is just dedicated to long form. He's got it down. Mm-hmm. And he is doing fantastic. For me, I came into this doing short form with Instagram, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's I just take my Instagram stuff and just push it over.
So you're bouncing your content over from one platform to another.
Yeah.
And then you've done fairly well on TikTok as well.
I mean, early, so that's where Stumpenhorst said, I talked to him at IBS, whatever it was, 2020, 2021. And I was like, is this TikTok thing worth doing? He's like, man, everything I post goes viral because they're trying to steal, basically. It incentivizes you to post on TikTok if everything you do blows up and you're getting a lot of followers. Because Instagram, even, it ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
And so to kind of make themselves rise versus Instagram, it seemed like that was the strategy. And sure enough, you just post and it just blows up. So I've been at the same, I don't know what I'm at on TikTok, maybe like 230, 240. It's basically been the same for the last 2 years.
Dude, I have 12,000 followers on TikTok. I put a hard 30 days in on TikTok. A hard 30, like every day, committed, verbiage, everything. No copies, all fresh content. I gained 100 followers. So I was like, you know what?
Yeah, and so some of that stuff, so I tried to treat TikTok at the beginning like I treated Instagram. I thought if I respond to comments, people ask questions, we'll build a community.
Mm-hmm.
They are the dumbest people. I'm going to just say it. The dumbest of the dumb comment on TikTok. The spelling's bad. It's lowercase. It's like you're talking to somebody who thought 1975 was like they were the best framers on the planet. All of the things that have been settled since then, structurally, they're like, this is the best way to do it. And I just realized the audience was very antagonistic and not particularly educated. And so I talked to Stumpenhorst about it. He's like, dude, I post in ghost. He's like, I don't respond to comments
over
there.
Ghost.
Yeah. And so that's what I do. Very rarely.
So Studio Man has a is also a ringmaker, and he has a ringmaking channel on TikTok. He's done rather well with. He's probably similar in size as Tim, 240, 250, something like that.
No, somewhere above 160.
160. Yeah, but I don't see that platform growing. I mean, I don't dance and I don't joke around, and I'm a little bit more serious about what I do. Sometimes I joke in my videos and it's funny, mm-hmm. but you know, I'm kind of a more of a serious builder. Like, hey man, this is what we did today. Not like serious, just like energetic and like this is what I did.
Focused.
Yeah. So for me, it's like time lapses and how to videos and occasional tool and just what I did today. That's my Instagram. And I've done rather well with that. Mm-hmm. But lately, dude, I'm just flatter than flat. I lost 12,000 followers last month.
It is disheartening. I follow the CEO of Instagram now. So I thought it was just me because I'll ebb and flow. When we're not really in the thick of framing, I won't get much growth. And when we're really framing and that's what all the content is, then that's when I grow. But I start following Adam, whatever his name is, and he made the comment one day of how they're deprioritizing larger accounts so that littler accounts have a chance, which that's I totally get.
Well, yeah.
But I'm also, because if you jumped on the platform now and you had no hope of growing, then why would anybody get on the platform? So I can see from their side why they want people to feel like they have a chance. But then how do you deprioritize those that have worked hard to get where they're at? It's not an accident when you have a big following. It's an insane amount of work and consistency.
Yeah, no, I agree, because I feel like if you're at the top of your genre, okay, and I can firmly say that you, as what you do, you're at the top of your genre of framing, like framers
mm-hmm.
and house builders, home builders, as far as your account size, and I am at the top of deck builders. I'm specific to decks. I don't do fences. I don't do kitchens or bathrooms or basements. I build decks and that's it. That's the name of my business, Dr. Mm-hmm. Decks, you know? So it is hard when you've worked that hard for over a decade at building an audience, and then they kind of like say, well, you've gotten to a certain level. And then I see all these guys, I would call them, some of them are my competition, because some of us are going for the same companies mm-hmm. for sponsorship. So if these guys are getting the opportunity that I'm not, and it's because Instagram isn't playing the field right, then I'm at a disadvantage.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get too, because I'm looking at other accounts that are massive, like Murray, Kruger Construction.
Yeah.
What is he, 2 million?
Is he already at 2 million?
Oh, I could look it up real quick. I think he is. He's such a nice guy.
I'm trying to get him on. I need his number too. I'm trying to get him on this thing.
Yeah, I don't have his cell.
Have you noticed some of these guys?
He's at 2.9.
What?
Last time I looked, he was at 1.9. Good
Lord. Last time I looked, he was at 1 million.
Murray when you have 56 million on a post. But a lot of his videos, looking at him,
he's not even talking in them anymore.
No, he's got a good editing style. So he's consistently between 500,000 and 1 million views. But there for a while, I could guarantee a company, this will hit at least 100,000 views on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Now that happens a couple times a month,
right?
And it's like, what happened here? It's the same. So
man, my count's like a turd right now. It just if I get 10,000 views, I'm lucky.
Yeah.
Unless I'm doing a Stabila challenge, then I'm good. Then I get millions of views.
Well, and so there is this. So you could try to do just the viral type stuff to gain the views. But I feel like a huge part of our credibility comes from kind of staying above the constant worry about the algorithm and just put out. For me,
be consistent.
It's like, yeah, be consistent, but try to put, like, yeah, you got to do the viral videos because people want to see it too, and it's fun. It changes it up. You got to keep your account fun. But my goal was to share knowledge. Like most, for example, with Simpson Strong Tie, they were the very first company that sponsored me. I reached out. It was an Instagram rep that would always comment. He was great about answering questions, and I remember DMing him, and I was like, you know, we already used all the products. Our engineer mm-hmm. specs him,
mm-hmm.
and we got to install them correctly.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big part of writing for JLC. And so I reached out to him and he put me in touch with marketing, and that was like, I don't know, 2020. And so a big part of my content for them is just showing the right way, because most of the time it's what do they call it? Misinstalled in the field. So it's the wrong nails.
Dude, talk and about haters. Can you believe some of the comments you'll get, even though you did it right?
Yeah.
That people think you did it wrong?
So what do you call people? Because there's ignorance that you just don't know, and mm-hmm. there's being opinionated. But what do we actually call people who deliberately stay ignorant? You know how often, though, Jason, just to take a quick tangent, I got a message from a guy the other day, because I made a comment in the video I posted on YouTube last week. Just offhanded, you know, I had a long section of video and I needed to fill it with voiceover. So sometimes I just tell mm-hmm. stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, you guys ever notice why we never swear? And I was like, because personally, I don't like the sound of swearing. But just think, you're limiting your audience if you do swear on in your content. Like, you can do whatever you want to do. There's a very popular YouTuber that was very pro current president, and he lost like 200,000 subscribers.
Wow.
Now, that's his choice.
Yep.
But my feeling is, this is a business. Why would I limit my market or my audience?
You know, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I've had parents send me videos of their five-year-old with dad with the iPad, and they're in their pajamas and they're getting ready to go to bed and they're watching Dr. Dex videos.
Yeah.
That's what did it for me. I was like, I'm never cursing on my page, period, ever. Because I want to be a role model for these young kids. If they... Maybe I caught a follower for life, man. You just don't know, you know? And I think that the people that actually originally follow you give you more love and respect. And the positive DMs that you get from these people, it's humbling, man. I am humbled mm-hmm. to be in this position I'm in, and I'm grateful for it.
Don't you find at the shows? That's where you can get a disproportionate number of know-it-alls, trolls, whatever.
Yep.
Sometimes they're right. So you got to be the bigger, you know, a big person, humble, and say, yeah, you got it. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. I got to modify that. But usually it's just people that are mean-spirited.
Right.
But then at the shows, you can't go anywhere without people walking up and saying, thanks for the content.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, love your content.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, so people actually, but like for most of us, how often do you come and comment on my content? Hey, that's a really cool technique. Like, never.
No, I never comment on your content. Oh, well, I wouldn't say that. Usually I'm sending you a text. See, I know you on a personal level, so I'm just going to send you a text message versus... But you know what? Maybe you're right, though. Putting a positive comment out on a public format would be a great way to show everybody else, hey, you're getting a little more acknowledgement.
Yeah, because somebody can hit the heart button. But the people who are motivated to comment or leave reviews on businesses are people that are...
I think you're right. I need to do that more.
Yeah, and
but
vice
then again,
versa.
It just takes more stinking time.
It takes time, and that's the thing. So you gotta, you know, you try to limit who you follow, and
yeah.
But that's something like, because you're right. It might not be a comment, but I think very highly of Kyle Stumpenhorst. You know, we got to spend time with him in Germany.
Yep.
And watching since I started following him, I don't know, 2017, 2018, watching his kids grow up. And like his son just sang the national anthem.
Cool.
And so Kyle had it in his story, and Cole knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know that I've ever heard the national anthem sung well. It's never really done that well.
Well, Roseanne did a pretty good job.
Roseanne was probably, she was top. Man, what a train wreck. But Cole killed it. And
nice.
So I DM'd Kyle, and I was like, dude, you've got to be so proud of your kids. Like, it's obvious that your kids are well-supported and well-loved.
Yeah.
Well, that's something I should say on the reel if he posted it as a reel, not just a private message, right? Because then it
resonates with so many more.
Yeah, other parents that are seeing that feeling the same way. I mean, and what's funny is last year at World of Concrete, Keen took us out to the go-kart racetrack.
I missed that. I didn't go.
It was so
Dang
fun.
It.
Kyle and I rode double. It was his idea.
I saw the whole thing, man. I was like, ah.
So guess who had so Cole's only 16.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who had like the second highest track time that night?
Cole?
Yep. So he got his little award. But as he's going past us, he's trash talking his dad. And Kyle's trash talking that. It was so fun to watch. But I'm like, this kid, he's so talented.
Yeah,
it's like,
he's
no
got
wonder
some skills,
Kyle's
man.
Proud of him.
Yeah. He's got skills. It's awesome to pass that on to your children.
That's the other thing about this whole influencer Instagram community, going to the shows, is the friendships, and especially at World of Concrete, how collaborative things have become.
Yeah.
And I talked to a couple of the brands, specifically Makita and Diablo, and they both commented how, like, the first day everybody comes to the booth and they just hang out. Mm-hmm. It's like a family reunion.
Yeah.
And then the last day, we're all scrambling to make the content, so we're all there together again, but this time holding each other's phones, you know, jumping in and out. You know, Canadian Carpenter, he needed something filmed, and so I filmed for him. And
nice. It's like,
and vice versa.
I missed out this year on all that. It was fun. Yeah, I wish I would have gone, but I just couldn't.
But the brands noticed that, and I said to one of the people over at Diablo, and she's like, yeah, we sit back and we watch you guys year after year now. And then you include other people coming in. And so I feel like the brands are seeing this more as just Dr. Dex or Awesome Framers or RR Builders Buildings. They're seeing it really as they're supporting the community.
Mm.
So even if one of them maybe pays a little bit more, I get the sense that they're willing to do that because it brings us in.
Yeah.
Not just for their content on their product, but because the magic happens when we all get together. I mean, we all walk away with so much content.
Yeah.
And some of the brands, they don't care that it's so product focused as much as it's us having fun with the product.
Well, that is important. I think so too. So, hey, we kind of went way left there for a second. And I'm grateful for what you've shared with us so far, but I kind of need to button up the Tim Euler story.
Oh yeah.
And then we can go into our bonus feature on Patreon. So I want to save some of those goodies for there, because I think we have enough to talk about for that. But kind of butt me up. So you're well into your social media journey, you're framing, and you're getting older, and you're feeling
so are you.
It. Yeah, no, I'm older than you are, so I know how it feels when you get up at 5 a.m. You're on site by 7 or 7:30. And you're trying to lubricate the joints a little bit because you just got to move. And now you're to a point where you're bringing in some younger talent, and you don't have to necessarily be on site for every hour of every day.
Yeah.
And now you're starting to take a more advisory role in your company.
Yeah, I would say, so the guy that worked with me for years, Kyle, we had such a blast. But
the
Tall Kyle. Yep. Good looking Kyle.
Yeah.
Good singer, Kyle. I mean, just hilarious, Kyle. He started with us when he was 19, was with us for what, 2005 to 22, 17 years.
Wow. Wow, man. Yeah. That's a minute.
But, you know, he had a family, and he was kind of, you can't frame forever type of thing.
Right, right.
And it's like, we get it. So for the last 3 years, two and a half years, maybe just a little over two, the guy that started with us, new Kyle, he's still new Kyle. He'll
okay.
Probably always be new Kyle.
He's going to be new Kyle forever.
He's just
That's
got
right,
such
new Kyle.
A good attitude. Yep. Yeah, he doesn't care. He's got such a good attitude that I'm there to do the stuff that requires the experience.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, especially because we're not super busy with interest rates where they're at, there's this point that comes where I want to keep doing all of the work.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't train the next generation.
Nope.
They got to get the reps. I think that's what Jamie Verdura says, and he's right. So I can still see the floor faster. I've got the muscle memory. I actually did one for Weyerhaeuser in 2020. I went out, see the floor. They sent 20 people out, taking pictures and watching, and they won't work with influencers. They make that very clear. Rather hilarious.
Boo.
Yeah, and it's like, you're shooting yourself in the foot, but I also understand they're a giant lumber company.
Go hug a tree.
Yeah. So... So I've got the muscle memory. I can do that stuff. We have the equipment, so it's not that heavy on the body. But in order for the guys to get training and become good in their own right, they have to do the work. I still feel bad not being the person to like pack the sheathing. Hmm. I feel less bad, but it's like, no, because I packed all the sheathing. How did I learn? I'm really good at moving material. How did I get that way?
By moving material. Over and over and over again. Yeah.
Yep. So as we got slower, the new guys came on, they need to get the reps, then it allows me to focus on the stuff that's more technical, and then it is insane the amount of work it takes to work with companies for partnered content. I have some deliveries coming today because I'm partnering with Jackery, which I'm super proud and happy.
Who's Jackery?
So they do all like the battery, you know, the portable batteries you take camping.
Yep.
And they've
yep.
expanded. They had a huge booth at IBS. And so I did a video for them last fall. And I think I timed it accidentally right. I did a video for them like 3 years ago. But I reached out again because we actually were running off batteries. We couldn't get power to the house that we were working on.
Okay.
And I'll just say it. Working with Champion, they are unwilling to work with influencers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they'll send you the unit, but then they won't pay you for the content. And I'm like, but you see, I can't buy camera gear because you sent me a tool or a battery. Right. I'd have to turn around and sell that at a discount all that time. That just doesn't work. And that was on behalf of Find Home Building, those two videos. So Jackery, I already knew, has a fantastic reputation, and they're very innovative. So they've got a new system. I think it's the 5000 Plus with a generator transfer switch that if I put that in the shop, in the garage, when we lose power, it actually qualifies as computer backup because it's a 0 millisecond switchover or like 1 millisecond, whatever that standard is. So anyway, reaching out to them, they were really happy with the video I did because it was so construction focused. It's like, hey, we can build a house because we can charge all of our cordless tools off of this. Then at night, I just plug this in and we're good to go for the next day, or maybe only twice a week. And so now seeing them at IBS with their huge booth, I was like, oh, they want to push into the space. So it's just good timing.
Mm-hmm. Good for
but
you.
But it's taken 6 months.
Yeah.
I'm like, back and forth, and you know, it was Chinese New Year and they were swamped, and it's just the normal realities of life.
Yeah.
And then they're like, can you have a video done within like a week? And I was like, whoa, I'm going to JLC, how will I do that? So
yeah,
but right? I can do some of that stuff now because I don't have to frame all day, edit content before work, come home, offload the cameras, edit content after work, then field the email. So it's like you got to work all day, do the content, go meet with clients.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what a lot of times the guys that work with us, they are there for 8 hours. They have no idea what business owners do. And it's always the push and pull between, you know, management and labor, right? Is they don't realize that as a business person, you never have downtime. I'm answering emails while I'm on vacation last. Literally, I'm at the top of Smith Rock shooting content for Strong Tie as an intro to JLC. Also fielding a phone call to figure out scheduling because when the Building Science Symposium happens in April, we're figuring out which jobs to go film at. And then also the schedule for the week of JLC, because we're going to go to Martha's Vineyard and shoot with Mark Hendrickson.
Cool.
And it's like the only time I need to get back, they're all on the East Coast. I got to answer this, you know, we're texting.
Right now.
And I'm like, I'm just going to call. So 20 minutes, I see Nikki and the others heading down because we see the big cloud coming. And I'm like, okay, hey, Chris, I got to go. But, you know, so that's the thing is, yeah, you're on a hike, but you still got to handle business.
Yeah. Or you lose out. You miss out.
Yeah,
you know, the opportunities are there. You got to seize them when you can.
Yeah, and I want to be known as the person who makes other people's jobs easier,
mm-hmm.
and not cool. be the difficult person. So,
well, I think you are. I think you live your life that way. So, Tim, man, thank you so much for your wisdom and your insight. you know,
well, you and I can't get together without it just going hours, right?
We got to go 2,500 miles to get together, minimum. And then sometimes we go 5,000, 7,000 miles away from home, and then we hang out in Heidelberg. As a matter of fact, Kiki showed me a picture of you in Heidelberg, Germany, and
you weren't
having it.
Well, it was a little long. That the tour guide in character, that was pretty awkward.
Yeah. You were just not in the headspace, and I'm going to give this picture to Calvin, and he's going to flash
it
on the screen.
You got to put it up there, yeah.
Yeah, you were sitting down on this... I don't know, 5,000-year-old stoop or something like that.
Oh, it was in that alley, wasn't it? Yeah. I know exactly where that was, next to the church. Everybody went to the church, and I was like, I've seen a lot of churches.
And, you know, Kiki and I don't drink, so, like, we all are like, let's go have a beer. I'm like, oh, okay. So, I actually enjoyed you, and this is the one thing I learned about Tim Mueller. Everybody has a persona of you because of what you've put on the internet. And early in the first 5-7 years of your page, it was a hilarious, funny, dancing, soaking wet in the rain, Washington rain gear. I mean, doesn't matter what you wear because you're soaking wet no matter what. Mm-hmm. Falling in mud puddles and jumping over this and doing bouncy jump. I mean, all the stuff you've done, it's been hilarious. I've loved it along the way. But I learned a different side of Tim, that Tim isn't always on. like that in his personal life. Like when he's when he's on a trip, when you're spending time with Tim, he's a completely different person. And that's the Tim I know. So I know both sides of Tim. And Tim, I'm super grateful that you took the time to be on this podcast with us and to support us in a time that I really need that support to get this thing up and running.
No problem. So,
with that being said,
thank you very much.
Yeah. With that being said, Tim, your handle at Sonic Screwdriver.
Yep, on Instagram.
That's your photo page, and Tim has some really amazing photos of the Aurora Borealis and this nighttime shot, Milky Ways. Yeah, man, just like wow, that's incredible. And then he also is known very well on Instagram as Awesome Framers, also on YouTube as well. We'll put the links down below in this video. But that's all we're going to give you for free. If you want to hear the juicy stuff that we have coming up, you need to jump over to our Patreon page. It's a simple donation monthly that you guys can get some of this extra bonus footage. And so, Calvin, hit that music. We're out of here. Tim Mueller, thank you so much for being on our podcast. I am very grateful for you. Namaste.
Thank you.
It was nice to spend time with both of you.
Yeah.